Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stretch run of Grant and Danny without Danny on a football Friday. Thanks much for making the show part of your day. Means a lot. We're brought to you, as always, by the law firm, Kendori & Murad. They'll help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation for their estate planning attorneys today, camlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them G&D sent you. That's camlawyers.com. You lose a loved one, they will take good care of you and get all that important, not fun stuff done with you after the fact. And speaking of, unfortunately, tragic deaths, Greg Gumbel has passed away.
Very sad.
Greg Gumbel was one of my first guys in broadcasting. Just an iconic voice, great pipes. Greg Gumbel, a guy who, at 78 years old, no longer with us, I remember from his time calling NFL games.
Yes.
I remember as a great studio host for college basketball, CBS, for many, many years for the NCAA tournament. Of course, Bryant Gumbel's brother. But I think Greg Gumbel, it must have just been that he was on an A or B team or something on CBS at the perfect time for my formative football years. But he is one of the first, like, play-by-play voices I can remember calling big NFL games.
So I don't remember him as much as the NFL broadcaster. I think of him all the time as the Selection Sunday host for March Madness.
Good one.
And him being there in the studio, he did, you know, that's a tough job, right? Like, you've got to be so calm. You've got to be able to toss to the guys. And just, he ran everything so effortlessly and so calmly and so matter-of-factly. He was so good as a studio host. I really admired what he was able to do. And it's not going to be the same watching March Madness this year, figuring out the teams in the bracket and not having him on TV. So, really sad to lose him today.
Sounds like he passed away from cancer, which is just such a pain in the butt. One day, hopefully, we're going to continue to make more and more progress. And you compare where we are now to 25 or 30 years ago, it's incredible growth. But so many loved ones, so many awesome greats in their fields lost to that terrible disease. Greg approached his illness like one would expect he would, with stoicism, grace, and positivity. His wife, Marcy Gumbel, and his daughter, Michelle Gumbel, said in a joint statement, "He leaves behind a legacy of love, inspiration, and dedication to over 50 extraordinary years in the sports broadcast industry. His iconic voice will never be forgotten." I think of him, too, on AFC calls of, like, Brady Manning-type games, right? It was always, like, the really good. Didn't call Washington games very often.
No.
Maybe if they were playing the Colts or something, you'd very rarely get a Greg Gumbel game. But it's a lot of the old-school Patriots, Tom Brady-era games for Greg Gumbel. So thinking about him and his family. Let's squeeze in one more. Turner's in Hollywood on G&D wants to talk about the commander that he thinks could have a huge game in a huge spot on Sunday Night Football. What's up, Turner? How are you?
Hey, first of all, I want to thank you guys for letting me on your show. I appreciate you. It's a great show.
Thanks for calling in, man.
I think B-Rob is going to be the guy. Reason why, he's got a chip on his shoulders. Those two fumbles he's gonna be mad coming out. And Atlanta's not gonna be able to stop the run the way Philadelphia did. If B-Rob gets off, then Daniels gets off, and then crazy, you know, or my man Terry gets off, and any receiver gets off. Because if that run goes the way it's supposed to go, that Commander's offense rocks and rolls.
Certainly does. Appreciate 100%. The call. I mean, the only thing I'm going to say to that is they've had really one game where Robinson has had a ton of success, dating all the way back to, like, Carolina. And that was in a half, if you remember, because he got hurt in that game. He didn't play in the second half. So he had 6 yards per carry, 12 for 70 in one half. So before that, you're going back to, like, the Arizona game when he was 21 for 101 is his last real signature performance. But since then, it's been way more not that effective than effective. He had the Tennessee game where he had a big game, 103 yards on 16 attempts. 40 of those were on his first run of the game untouched, perfectly blocked. From that point forward, it was 15 for 60. That is basically 4 yards per carry for the rest of the game, which is just okay. Otherwise, struggled against Philly, struggled against the Saints, struggled against Philly the other time, struggled against Dallas, didn't do a whole lot. It was like 4 yards a carry against the Chicago Bears with a 20-yard run, so otherwise, like, barely over three. I mean, that's going back 6 games. So I mean, it's not a B-Rob thing. It's largely a run game thing. But it just has not come as easily. They have not had answers up front like they did early in the season, period.
Well, and I'm curious how much of it is the interior O-line, I pointed this out earlier, has seemed to struggle really the last 6 games where 5 of them they've been able to or have not been able to really run the football. But also, you know, we talked about Cliff and adjustments and some of this stuff. Defenses adjust too, right? They adjust to the fact that early in the season, maybe they didn't have the dominant in terms of explosive run game, but they were able to rip off 4, 5, and 6 a pop. They haven't been able to do that recently. So I'm curious how much of that is a change in the defense versus the interior O-line. But regardless, they need to find something in the run game, even if it isn't B-Rob, right? Whether it's McNichols and getting him involved outside, or if it's Jaden Daniels being the run game, getting outside, they've got to find something in the run game. I think the easiest route would be giving it to B-Rob up the middle. But if it's once again going to be like banging your head against the wall and you're not being effective, they've got to find something in that run game.
All right, we'll come back to the Commanders and the Falcons to make our final predictions and our player to lock in on before we say goodbye coming up as we take you to 6:30. But I want to spin you around the NFL with 5 things I think going into week 17 and another weekend of football, 3 Saturday games tomorrow, and then a full slate on Sunday. Number one, red zone is no longer 7 hours of commercial-free football starts right now. It's 7 hours of red zone football starts right now. For a couple weeks, Scott Hansen was saying commercial-free football, and people were upset because they were taking and adding in commercials. You can't tell us it's commercial-free if you're using commercials. They were making him a liar. So now Scott Hansen has started saying 7 hours of red zone football because, like all good things, they must come to an end. We no longer get commercial-free red zone. Now, I believe you're like the last guy on the planet that doesn't watch red zone, right?
I do not watch red zone, no. So this doesn't affect me at all, but it is a shame that you've had something that's good for so long that was so beautiful because it was just football. There was no commercials.
Do you
there
know
was
how
no
amazing
filler.
That is to sit just your football. Fat ass down on the couch, get some food and drink, and to not have to worry about one commercial break for 7 consecutive hours.
It's incredible. It's something that doesn't exist in the world now and really doesn't exist because even right. That has been taken away.
You've stolen it from us. But I just love that Scott Hansen was getting so much crap for like a couple of weeks where he was still saying it and they were doing these little commercials where he finally started saying. And that was his whole catchphrase, by the way.
Yeah.
He like would ramp it up to 11, and it was on T-shirts.
7 hours of commercial-free football.
It's literally the comment he was known most for. And now he's got to say, 7 hours of red zone football starts.
Yeah.
Just doesn't have the same ring to
it. It's like the Commanders.
Number two. That's a good point. The name change. 5 things I think, NFL style. Brock Bowers is not getting enough credit for one of the most amazing rookie seasons in history.
Yes.
And maybe it's because we're on the East Coast, and he's out on the West Coast playing in Vegas. This guy is doing things that we've never seen done before. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's more impressive than what Daniels has done, because as a quarterback, it's just a harder way to live than a tight end at a position where there's not the same attention on you. You're not getting the credit or the blame week in and week out, right? Playing quarterback's one of the hardest things, if not the hardest thing to do in sports. Daniels is going to win Rookie of the Year, and he should win Rookie of the Year. But Brock Bowers is having a rarer season, in my opinion, than what Daniels is having. Bowers, the tight end for the Raiders, has 101 catches already with two games to go. He has 1,067 yards already, and he has four touchdowns right now. In a terrible offense with horrendous quarterback play, he has more yards as a receiver than Terry McLaurin this season. He has like 25 more catches than Terry McLaurin this season, Tobes.
It's
101
been...
for 1067 as a rookie. He's already got 15 more catches than any rookie tight end ever. He's got five catches away from a rookie record for any position, and he's doing it in an awful offense in a bad organization with nubby quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, he's tied for second in receptions in the league. He's, like you said, top 10 in yards in the entire league. He's leading all tight ends in yardage. I mean, it's been spectacular to watch. And you brought up a guy earlier because they're going to face him on Sunday. Remember, Kyle Pitts was drafted fourth overall. He went over 1,000 yards in his first season, which is crazy to think about because it feels like he hasn't done anything in his career. He had 68 receptions. Brock Bowers is already 101, and he finished with 1,026 yards. So he had a few more. It was, you know, much bigger play threat,
right.
But Brock Bowers has already passed him in yardage, way past him in receptions, and we heard all about that Pitts season. Remember? Like, it was all about this
totally.
Is a tight end. We've never seen this. This is incredible. And yet, Brock Bowers is doing everything and more that Kyle Pitts did, and no one talks about it.
It's weird to me, but he is so good. If you watch a Raiders game, it's hard not to come away just blown away
and
by the player.
How many times do we have someone at like that sort of position, right, that we're like, yeah, this guy's going to be special? I mean, heck, Pitts is an example. We're told how special he's going to be. Clearly has not been that. Brock Bowers, we were told all along, this might actually just be the best player in the draft, right? He's just that special, and he is.
He also does not look like an NFL player.
He does not.
He's balding, which doesn't mean you can't play in the NFL. Just kind of funny for a young guy who's like 22.
Yeah.
He wears like, he just looks like a goofy kid.
Look like a football player.
There was a picture of him next to Gronk before the draft. People were like, if this gets out, he's going to go in the third round. And yet, he's having a Gronk season.
I mean,
he's putting up like better numbers than Gronk early in his career. All right, number three, things I think, NFL Week 17. C.J. Stroud's sophomore regression has been loud and obvious. Really disappointing year two. This was a guy last year who was the Offensive Rookie of the Year, who finished in the top eight in MVP voting, who went to a Pro Bowl, who everybody kind of heaped praise on as having had one of the great rookie seasons ever. Like, he was, a year ago, Jaden Daniels, basically. Not the same kind of player. Stroud doesn't leave the pocket if you put a gun to his head. But, I mean, he's very much a pocket passer, my kind of guy, staying in the pocket making throws. But if you compare this year to last year, it's night and day. 62% completed, 19 touchdowns, 12 picks, extremely pedestrian numbers. If you look at touchdown percentage from last year, 4.6 to this year, 3.6, way down. Interception percentage, way up, from 1% of the time to 2.3% of the time. Yards per catch, last year, 13, this year, 11. Yards per game, 274, last year, 230 this year. His quarterback rating, last year was over 100, this year is 86. His QBR, from 57 to 49. Sack percentage, about 7% of the time last year, 9% this year. Had been sacked 38 times all of last season. He's on pace to be sacked close to 60 times this year. It's just a completely different year for that offense and for Stroud. There's not really a good reason for it because they got weapons, same play caller. Very, very odd to see him take this big step back.
I think there is one reason, and it's the offensive line. And
that I will agree with.
It adds in so much, and it just shows you how important the play caller and O-line is. Like, you know, this is a guy last year that was spectacular. It seemed like he never missed a throw. Whenever a guy was open, he hit it. He took advantage of plays. And this year, you go back to the Christmas Day game, I mean, there were dudes running open. He would just miss them. And they're not difficult throws. He was inaccurate. He doesn't seem comfortable in the pocket. And like you said, he's a pocket passer. So if you're not comfortable in the pocket, you take away his accuracy, you're losing a lot of the specialness of C.J. Stroud. I think he'll get back to that eventually. But, man, it's been a huge disappointment this season.
I agree with you on the line. But to that point you just made, it's not really even just that. I mean, he is missing lots of throws with no pressure.
It's true.
The Chiefs game, particularly early this past weekend, was like really stark. I mean, it was a that was a bad performance. That was like a benchable quarterbacking performance.
Yeah, it's just it's weird. I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's something where it's just a sophomore slump. Remember, we saw him paraded everywhere in the offseason. Maybe he was crowned too early and felt it a little bit. I don't know. Regardless, this year has been a huge disappointment, and you know he needs to get back on track in year three.
I guess it was Baltimore this past Christmas game. They all blend together. Threw a couple picks against the Chiefs in a loss the week before that, but back-to-back L's for the Texans. All right, number four, things I think, going into Week 17, NFL season, Grant and Danny. How about Dave Canales is getting slept on as a head coach? I think he's done an outstanding job with the Panthers. Now, Commanders fans, you want him to do one more outstanding job on the sideline this weekend, because if Carolina beats Tampa Bay, Washington clinches before they ever even kick off on Sunday Night Football against the Falcons. But Canales, just look at the resume now over these last four seasons. Saves Geno's career, Geno Smith, when he was coaching in Seattle. Then he resuscitates Baker Mayfield's career in Tampa Bay. Now he's gone to Tampa Bay, gone from Tampa Bay to Carolina, and Bryce Young looks like a completely different guy. We're looking at a pretty magical stretch here as a quarterback whisperer, helping guys that we think aren't very good out to look a lot better than that when he coaches them and after he leaves them. Not to mention, as a coach of a terrible Panthers team that he took over at the beginning of this season, they're 3-4 in their last seven games with wins over the bad teams they play, Saints, Giants, Cardinals, and losses close by a field goal to Kansas City at the Horn in overtime to the Bucs, who might make the playoffs, had Philadelphia on the brink. If they catch one pass, they beat the Eagles. Like, Dave Canales has done a really, really good job, and because their record's not great and because it's Carolina, I just don't think many people are talking about it.
Yeah, it's crazy to see the difference in those two guys that we just talked about, right? You think about C.J. Stroud, the arrow trending way down, and Bryce Young with Dave Canales, and the arrow's trending up. Not saying that he's an above average or worthy of the number one pick yet, but he's playing decent football to the point that we were thinking at the beginning of the season, middle of the season, you know, he was benched earlier in the year. We're thinking, wow, is Carolina going to go back to the well of drafting a rookie quarterback and starting over with one of the guys in this class? And that has all been shut up recently by the way that they've played and Canales bringing Bryce Young back off the bench, and they've played really good football, and Bryce Young starting to play a little more confident. You know, at times he's looking more like the guy we saw at Alabama. This past week, he trucked a dude in the open field. The small little dude, Bryce Young, is running dudes over. He's playing with more confidence, so it's a credit to Canales. You got to give these guys time. It's tough when in our media world, we love to have the immediate gratification and make takeaways right away, but sometimes it takes some time, and the longer it's gone with Canales and Bryce Young, it's starting to look like a good marriage.
All right, here's number five of the five things I think. I think this tells a story. Running backs are back.
Big time.
1,000-yard rushing players in a season by year. In 2020, there were five. In 2021, there were four. In 2022, there were seven, the high water mark. Last year, there were four guys that ran for 1,000 yards. This year, there are already 12.
Wow.
And there's another eight or nine in the final 2 weeks that are on a pace that could get them there. So think about it. We could have about five times as many this year as in two of the last 3 years, which is pretty amazing, in my opinion. The 1,000-yard back season, and Lamar Jackson, I guess, would be one of those guys with a huge finish to the year as well. But even if we settle in at 15 or 16, which would double anything we've seen in the last 5 years, I think that tells a story. We saw a lot of teams try to take away, in a pass-happy league, the deep passing game, the big plays, the chunks, the explosives, some of those things. And as we've seen that, Toby, what has happened as a result and a response, teams just ran the football against lighter boxes, and it worked.
I mean, you just take a look right now at the teams that have the best offenses in the league in terms of yards per game. Baltimore, they're passing the ball less than 50% of the time. The Lions are passing it at a 52%, but we know how important the run game is to them. Tampa's kind of the exception here. They pass the ball like 57% of the time. Green Bay, 48% of the time they're passing the ball. So that means they're running it over half the time. Washington, when they've been at their best, is kind of 50-50-ish. Philadelphia is up there, and they obviously are a run-first football team. I think what you're seeing is the evolution of how things go. Remember, the Chiefs thing was, oh, okay, we're going to have to park two safeties in the parking lot because we can't allow the deep pass. And so as teams have understood, well, if they're not going to give us the explosive plays, then that means there's one less dude in the box. He'll start running the ball. So I think you're just starting to see the natural evolution of how things go. They talk about the league being a cycle and, you know, different things happen and analytics and everything gets added in. But at the end of the day, football is still football. And I think you're seeing that cycle where, you know, the pass game was in vogue for a long time and people were able to exploit it and take a big advantage with it. Now, because people are starting to back off a little bit and not allow the big plays, people are starting to pound the rock a little bit more. And you're seeing the return of that. And if you listen closely, I think you can hear the rooster crowing somewhere a little bit excited about that.
Yeah, he's fired up wherever he is, celebrating his holiday weekend kicking off on a Friday night. Three games on Saturday tomorrow in the NFL, a 1 o'clock kick in New England, where the Chargers at 9-6, a playoff-bound team, play the Patriots at 3-12. Then the 4:30 game two of a triple header, Broncos-Bengals, should be very compelling. Denver trying to clinch a playoff spot. Cincinnati at 7-8 still has very slim hopes. They've got a win. They could do double duty here because they could ding the Broncos in the process. And then the final game of the night, this is a big one for the Rams, trying to win the NFC West still. They host the Cardinals at 8:10 East time in L.A., 9-6 Rams trying to get to 10-6 with a chance for an 11-win season. This has been one of Sean McVay's best coaching jobs. Thing I'm most excited about in each of these games, love watching Drake May. I think he's had a brilliant rookie season on a terrible team. Get to see him in the early window. That middle game, Joe Burrow's played at a level probably as well or better than anybody.
Correct, yeah.
At quarterback in the entire NFL. And Bo Nix has been an interesting watch this year as well. At one point, closed the gap with Jaden Daniels in the rookie of the year hunt. At this point, it's Daniels's, and he's run away with it. And then finally, with the Rams and the Cardinals, no individual player storyline there, but I do think, as I said, just the way McVay has coached through all those injuries this year, the Rams get to the playoffs, they're going to be battle-tested.
Yeah, I think when you look at tomorrow, I'm really excited about this Broncos-Bengals game because, you know, watching Hard Knocks and some of these things. But the Bengals, if they can keep themselves alive, I don't know that anyone wants to face Joe Burrow in the playoffs because of how he's been playing. So if they can find a way in after they basically dug themselves a grave and are trying to claw out of it, they can really help themselves and keep themselves alive into Week 18 if they can beat the Broncos. Obviously, it ends if they lose. So I think that's going to be the most intriguing one because the way that he has played, if they had a winning record, Grant, or if they had any semblance of a defense, they'd be one of the top teams in the AFC, and Joe Burrow would probably be leading the MVP discussion, honestly. So I'm excited about that. Like you said, excited to watch May, and you know, when you get to the nightcap tomorrow night, just interested to see in a Rams team that you could potentially meet in the playoffs if things fall correctly in the playoff picture. What do they look like coming down the stretch here? And I think Washington would feel favorable if they had to go to LA to play them in the playoffs.
Yeah, bring on the Rams. Compared to some of the other options. So there you go, your trip around the NFL here in the stretch run on Grant and Danny. It is time to pick a player to lock in on for the Commanders game, Sunday Night Football. Our player to lock in on is presented by Baldino's Lock and Key, your one-stop shop for auto keys and fobs. Visit baldinos.com.
I'm going to go with Jeremy Chinn. I think he's going to be big as well in this one. You talk about what I talked earlier about how important Frankie Louvu is going to be. I think Jeremy Chinn coming in, finishing some run plays and big in pass coverage too. If you're going to leave guys on some islands, they're going to play some single high in various ways. You know, what are you going to do? And I think those safeties helping with what they're going to do with Sanra Still and BSJ, and if Mike Davis is subbing in, I think having some of that safety help, I think Jeremy Chinn's going to need to have a big one this week.
I'm going to go with Benjamin St. Juste.
Love it.
We talked a lot about Marshawn Lattimore today. He will not play. He's been ruled out. Dan Quinn did the opposite of giving a vote of confidence to BSJ in his press conference when asked about if St. Juste would be the next man up. He basically said, well, we'll have a couple of guys play. He referenced Michael Davis over St. Juste and talking about both of those guys having gotten some reps at practice. I say all that to say, though, I think the matchup of a bigger it's not slow, but a more plodding possession-wide receiver who's very talented in Drake London matches up better for St. Juste than some of the other guys he's had to deal with recently. So I'll put the spotlight on him. If he gets one last crack at making a couple plays and helping Washington as a positive influence in a huge game, maybe he can still swing the pendulum going into the end of his rookie contract on how people feel about him possibly being back. Huge, huge game and maybe a big opportunity for him coming up on Sunday Night Football. Which brings us, Toby, to our final predictions for the Commanders and the Falcons. What do you got?
I'm going to go 28-24 Washington. I think they get it done. I think it's going to be a close game because of the because of the rain and the ugliness. I think Washington's going to still be hindered in the run game some, so I don't know if they're going to be able to be as explosive as they like and as efficient as they'd like, but I think ultimately with Jaden Daniels on your side, you're able to find the way. Sneaky, something to keep an eye on. Washington's had kicker trouble, but so has Atlanta. They don't have Young Wei-Ku. He's on injured reserve. He'd really struggled. Matthew Wright came in. He missed a kick last week. Interested to see if that plays a factor, and with some of the ugly weather, how much the kicking game is going to be affected, but I'll go 28-24 Washington.
I've got a 23-20 win for the Commanders in this game to clinch a playoff spot. I think Atlanta has the ball trying to drive to get the game-tying field goal and a sack fumble from Dante Fowler, getting him over 10 on the season, recovered by John Allen in his return in Landover, Maryland. He comes up with the football, shows it to the crowd, ball game over, competitive portion of the season over, on to the playoffs. At that point, would be nice. If you're going to the game, enjoy yourself. Hopefully, I'll see some of you out there on Sunday. Big thanks to Darius and Ryan for their hard work behind the scenes, as always. Fun hanging out, Tobes.
It's great. Always great.
I think we're doing it again at some point in
the
future.
I'm sure it's at some point. At some point.
Danny should be back sometime next week. But for our crew, Grant saying so long. Thanks for listening. We'll be back at 2 o'clock on Monday. Have a great weekend. Lots of football in the forecast. Enjoy it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.